thank you for joining us for this episode of Journey Now, produced by Journey Church in Brentwood, Tennessee. Join us online or in person on Sundays at 9:30 and 11 a.m. For more information on Journey Church and our gatherings, visit journeytn.com.
From Journey Church in Brentwood, Tennessee, where you're all invited to gather around our table, as Susie taught on Sunday, but sadly, there is no food or wine. This is Journey Now. Welcome back again, everybody. I'm Grant, and I'm here with a lot of the Journey pastors this week. We've got more people than we have microphones, so this could get interesting.
We'll hear Tim.
That was Susie. Yeah.
Oh. That's Tim over in the corner away from the microphone.
Hey, this is Sam.
Kevin.
And I'm Susie.
So there we go. So Susie.
Yes, sir.
Shared the idea of table fellowship from the book of Luke this last weekend. And for anyone who hasn't heard the message yet, you can find it by searching our Journey podcast, but just to get people up to speed, can you give us like the 1 minute Spark Notes version of what you said just to set the table for us?
Yes. Well, I kind of started off explaining that table fellowship is something that goes deep into the historical Jewish tradition. And so when Jesus came on the scene, he was walking into a culture that was already steeped heavily into the table fellowship tradition that really was about following a lot of rules and traditions that the Pharisees had in place to separate themselves from the culture around. Table fellowship was used to kind of show who you were and your social status and your value and who you valued and honored and accepted in the culture at hand. So when Jesus came on the scene, and you hear in scripture, you read in scripture, a lot of Pharisees getting angry about the fact that he eats with sinners and he dines with sinners, Jesus came to change the rules of table fellowship and what was accepted and received by God by being with sinners and outcasts and showing compassion to the poor and sitting around tables talking about how to love your neighbor and how to love your enemies. And so those were all things that were counterintuitive to the Pharisees at the time and the religious community at the time. And he displayed love and hospitality and welcomeness and openness and acceptance by bringing people around his table who were often looked down on, but also were from different ends of the spectrum of each other. So it wasn't just about who he brought to the table, it was about who he surrounded the table with. You would be at a table often with people who came from very different ideologies and backgrounds, and those people would come together with him in the middle and continue walking with him and putting aside their differences because what they saw and experienced with Jesus was something way more beautiful and compelling. And so we're invited now as followers of Jesus to do the same, opening up our tables and literally or proverbially at this point in life, but welcoming people, being kind to people and loving people who may have different ideologies than us. But especially when we have the common place of Jesus between us, it's a way forward in what has appeared to be a lot of work that we as the church have before us in the days to come.
Okay, well, this has been the Journey Now podcast. Yeah. Thanks very much for...
Are those Spark Notes? It was a little long. Sorry.
That was basically every question that I had, but I mean...
Sorry.
It's okay. We're going to make this work.
We can dig into it.
Yeah.
There's a lot to dig into.
Yeah. So, I mean, you talk about this whole idea of table fellowship being a political act.
Yeah.
Right? And this idea of it being radical in its inclusivity. Kevin, do you have people over for dinner, and how does that look in your life? The whole idea of fellowship and sharing with people.
Yeah, I think it's been a part of our life forever. I grew up in a home that always had people over, and Lori loves to have people over. During COVID, it's been a strain. We've had people on our porch. But there is this underlying value of when you invite someone into your home, there is a level of acceptance that moves beyond the surface mm-hmm. into something deeper. Mm-hmm. And it is to express something of the divine nature in somebody else to share a meal. It is a equaling force. It is to sit at a table where you're eating the same food from the same mm-hmm. place with without merit for someone to be better than at the table. And it brings about usually a discourse, a conversation that you can't have over the distance. And so there is this familiar feeling to having someone in your home. It brings intimacy.
It's interesting because you talk about how important the act of eating and drinking is there, mm-hmm, right?
Right.
That there's something there that's provision, that's mm-hmm. nurturing, that's caring for somebody.
Yep.
I was going to ask Tim, who is 12 feet from the mic right now,
doing great.
We can bring you in here. Because I know you have your group of people that you go walking with.
Yeah.
Right? So how is that different, that same kind of fellowship, in a different context where you're going out on a walk and you're all sort of heading in one direction together?
Yeah. I mean, we had a whole season where we left, our church community in California. And we had a whole season where we just decided we just want to be the church. So we weren't really a part of a bigger community. We just had, the church was in our house all the time. And in this season, that's not happening. But one of the beauties has been me going on walks with my wife or with other people. And I think it's just, it's getting us out of the context that we know, like getting out of just this room per se, or getting out of even just a small group in quotes, or whatever formal setting that we're in, to get outside and break that
routine. Yeah. You start routine. Do life with somebody.
Yeah.
There's something about it. Yeah.
So this is why people like go golfing with each other too, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's sort of this, just this thing that...
Well, it certainly isn't to play golf.
No, but I think it so matters if people are going to be intentional or not. You know, mm-hmm. at least if somebody's going to be intentional. So I've been on many golf trips when, mm-hmm. you know...
You play golf.
Yeah. But if you're in something for an intentional conversation, that's a real different...
Yeah, it just becomes the backdrop for the interaction that you're having, sort of human being to human being.
Yeah, or a meal. I mean, even the prayer at the beginning of a meal, I'm not a huge fan of just the prayer at the beginning of a meal, but there's something about it reminding you of, mm-hmm. it's really, you're taking communion every time you eat. Yeah. It's remembering Jesus every time you eat.
Well, and it's setting the foundation for love and relationship. So that when you actually walk and talk and or talk across the table and you have differences and you see things differently, it doesn't change the way you love a person. It doesn't change your capacity for that person, because it's the relationship foundation is on love and acceptance, right?
Yes, but that does go both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this season, it's been harder to do that in some ways, because it's been so divisive. I had somebody text me or text into the text thread that we do and say, how do I deal with somebody who, because we're talking about not evaluating and judging people in this season. And how do I not do that to somebody who judges me and my skin? Mm-hmm. That's what they said. Right. And so I just wrote back, you know, number one, I'm so sorry. And that's just sucks. And it's also a thing where this practice is more about our response than about other people's response mm-hmm. toward us. So
can you talk more about that?
Which part?
That this is more about
our response.
Well, like the practice that the 10,000 minute, mm-hmm. you know, that we're doing with 10,000 minutes this week is, as a community, is free evaluating. So we're not going to evaluate other people. Before I see somebody with my own eyes, I actually want to see them with the eyes of Jesus this week. And if this person who texted in is hanging out with somebody who's judging them for their skin. I was sorry, because that just is, that's so dumb.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
And yet the practice isn't about changing the other person. It's mm-hmm. about how do we actually get to walk mm-hmm. through this
together
and not do the same thing back to them. Like, you're just a bigot. That's what they're thinking. Yeah. She's thinking about this other person is, well, he's just a bigot. And that while that might be true,
that isn't the point.
It isn't the point. The point is actually to practice. How are we joining Jesus in this mm-hmm. moment mm-hmm. and saying, I want to see this person, be curious about this person's life versus mm-hmm. just the way even they see me.
Yeah.
So that changed me when I did that for a month. I practiced this practice for a month mm-hmm. and it changed the way that I walk into mm-hmm. a restaurant and I see somebody. I walk into a grocery store, watch somebody, how somebody's parenting. My first initial thought is I want to judge them and say, mm-hmm. you do not belong at this table, at the table that I want to be a part of.
Yeah.
And yet, if you saw some of the ways that I parent or, you know, whatever, somebody
for sure.
could go,
yeah.
you know, God should not be letting you at his table. Yet he right. allows me at his table.
Yeah.
And there are reasons why I parent the certain ways that I parent or that that person parents the way they parent.
Right.
So it's just being curious and stopping this quick yeah. evaluation and saying, right. Jesus, I want your eyes on these people.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of relationship versus rhetoric, which is, you know, mm-hmm. the whole Bible. I a while back heard about a psychology study where they had a group of researchers go out and they were talking about allyship mm-hmm. and trying to get people to agree to advocate for people who weren't like them. And the first group of people they had go around, they said, we want you to just ask for somebody to see your point of view and to help you. And then the second group of researchers they sent out, and they said, what we want you to do is we want you to, first of all, just talk to the person and find out their story, mm-hmm. who they are, what their life is, what their experiences have been that inform their point of view, and then tell them about your life and who you are. And then I want you to ask them to help you advocate for whatever group of people. And it was amazing. It was like 10 times the number of people that said, yeah, I understand who you are, and therefore I'm willing to be your ally, versus if you just walked up to people. It was just...
yeah.
So, cool. Black sign and white
my,
difference.
Sign my petition. I want you to sign my petition. Just sign it, because I want to throw out the mayor, or I want you to do this, or I want you to, versus, hey, let's have a conversation.
Yeah.
You dehumanize people when you're just seeking something from
them. Use them for transactions.
Yeah. Well, it's manipulative too.
Yeah.
If you're just being with them because you want to talk them into seeing things your way or being on your side or agreeing
advocate.
With you, that's, mm-hmm. that's not seeing a person as a child of God. That's just being manipulative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Sam, yeah. I could have a completely wrong and warped view, but when you say,
don't leave it there.
When you say you're from the Midwest, right? Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
I picture like the family around the farm table with bounty of food and, you know, grandma and grandpa. And what was your uncle's name again?
Well, I have a bunch of them. Oh, Toby Cup.
There you go. Yeah. So, I mean, what was table fellowship for you, and how did it look like in your family and your mm-hmm. community in the Midwest?
Well, I think some of the most formative times were actually around the table with family, but every Sunday night we would have Sunday night church, and then, you know, all of us kids would play together, and then we'd beg our parents to take us to McDonald's afterwards, it really started, and I see this now, with the kids and their innocence mm-hmm. and their friendship and not really having any, there's no barriers, that created relationships for the parents as well, as they would sit around at McDonald's while we all played on the playground. And so...
That was pre-COVID to everybody.
That was many moons ago.
Oh, no.
So that was a real form of experience for me, and one of the things that made me love being in the community of the church that I was, you know, that I grew up in. So, I think also with family, my every like you know, we're heading into kind of Christmas season, and every Christmas Eve or Thanksgiving or we always were intentional about our family being together. And usually it was one day at one side of the family, mom's side of the family, the other day at dad's side of the family, but they were two completely different dynamics.
Right.
One, my dad's side of the family, the farmers, it was, there was a common, there's a job to be done, and a lot revolved around that. And my grandpa, on my mom and dad's, on my mom's side, it was, we just want to be together. And so the reason why we, even, you know, got together, was different for each side of our family.
So I wasn't even going, you mentioned holidays, and I wasn't even going there, but we're all headed in that direction. I mean, yeah. What are 2 weeks now to Thanksgiving? We got Christmas coming up. So what are the strategies? Kevin's laughing.
To survive.
Not just to thrive, but to make it be a beautiful thing, right? I mean, I'm not going to go into the election either right now, but one of the people who claims that they won the election says that that this should now be a time for healing, right?
Oh, okay.
So how, I mean, you've spoken about this before, Kevin. How can this be a time of healing around Thanksgiving tables and Christmas tables? Because I know there's a lot of people that are got to be super anxious about that right now.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how to solve that problem for everybody. I think it's going to be an ongoing dilemma for a while. But what I think the theological underpinnings of the idea of the open table is huge. Because what Jesus did was he took a commonplace thing, a glass of wine and some bread, and he made it extraordinary. Mm-hmm. What he did was he said, this is something, he didn't say when you gather as a church, he didn't say when you have the fourth Sunday of the month and you've got a little cup and a little piece of a wafer, you're going to remember me. This was every time that you now, the blueprint that was pasted on the forehead of these guys was bread and wine represents the blood and body of the man that died for us. So there's this instant connection with an everyday occurrence of I gather with a group of people and the great equaling force around that table is the body and the blood. Mm-hmm. And somewhere in Christendom, we made a ceremony out of something that was supposed to be every time. And Tim actually alluded to it a minute ago when he said, we kind of do it in a way when we pray before we eat, we kind of invite Jesus into the process. But I don't think we are really understanding that the everyday occurrence of bread and wine was a instrumental moment of equalizing everyone at that table at that moment, no matter their political affiliation, no matter where they come from, because they gather around the truth of what is that theological underpinning of what makes us all equals. Mm.
So good.
So good.
So
I don't know the answer to the other question, but I think that is the answer to that question. Because when I gather around a table, it also speaks to a little bit what Tim was talking about a minute ago, is when I sit down across from somebody who disagrees with me politically, it's not my job to judge them or change them. It's my job to love them and encourage them and invite them to the table.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's it.
So I'm going to go long, but this is just a good conversation. And
like all dinner table conversations.
Except we've got no food. Somebody screwed up here.
I would grab some.
Yeah, we need to go back. Tim ate at Soy Bistro.
Oh, did you?
Today, so.
Well, that's about every other day.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we can get sponsors for this.
We have the Apple one.
Sponsored podcast is where we're going. But the other thing that I wanted to ask you guys about, you know, you, Susie, mentioned this whole idea of seeing all of the table scenes in Luke and reading the book as a series of table gatherings, and which would be an amazing study. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of people have already done it, but it would be really great to spend time doing that.
Leonard Sweet has a book called The Table, and it's wonderful.
Is it?
Is it that?
It's, there's a lot of that in it. It's that's all cool. About being around the table and Jesus' work around the table.
What's his name? That's
great. Leonard Sweet.
Like sweet?
Yeah.
Awesome. So there's dessert at that table.
So I started thinking about, like, even in the broader context beyond just the book of Luke or the Gospels, and just in table gathering, mm-hmm. and partly because of the cultural importance of it. Mm-hmm. But it's just all throughout the Bible, whether it's the visitors coming to Abraham and Sarah, or whether it's King Xerxes showing off with his feasts in the book of Esther.
In the book of 300. No, I think he's going.
Or you know, Peter eating with the Gentiles. And what else, because you guys are the smart ones in the room, what else can we learn about the heart of God from all of these different gatherings and different places in the Bible? And that question is for anyone for 20 points.
Around the table, around food?
Yes.
Well, I can share what I personally like, what caused me to love Jesus more from my study before this week, last weekend.
Go.
Was just imagining, there's a couple times, a couple table scenes where it says Jesus was reclining at the table. And just imagining what those tables looked like. I mean, a lot of time, we're in the South, right? We're in the Southern living culture. So there's a lot of fluff that comes with tables here in the South, like setting a beautiful table and getting the china out and all the formality of it. But when I think of somebody reclining at a table, and I think about those, the Middle Eastern tables, which are low to the ground, surrounded by pillows, you know, much more comfortable seating. And many of the stories that you just mentioned a moment ago, Grant, where they were like impulsive, like spontaneous moments of meals being made, right? I just really picture a very at-home atmosphere. And the idea of Jesus inviting somebody to come to a table where he's reclining, I really sense this, like Jesus is inviting you to come and make yourself at home with him. So to me, that's what caused me to love Jesus even more last week was, wow, like it's so much more than coming and receiving and being accepted and being a part of him. It's literally finding your most at home place with the person of Jesus.
So your Jesus is a Southern California Jesus.
Or a Middle Eastern Jesus.
Anyone else have thoughts?
I think the imagery of the table it brings to mind God's provision. It brings to mind relationship. It brings to mind an affinity that otherwise we don't have. Something changes in those settings that allows for a vulnerability and an honesty that you usually don't get in a courtroom or a workplace or in a setting that doesn't imply equality.
Right.
Well, I would just say, as I think about the time that we spent being the church in the home, was so powerful because it was, if Jesus is doing most of his work in the everyday stuff of life, it wasn't in the...
Yes.
You know, it's why I love this community. We're not so focused on the 80 minutes that that's all we care about. It's like, okay, how does that help us then go out and walk with Jesus in the rest of the week? And meals were just, as Kevin was just saying, that was every day, mm-hmm. a few times a day. And so he was having just normal, doing life with people seemed to be the way that he did things. And if that's the way that Jesus did it, that's the way that we're invited to do it. So that's exciting.
Yeah. That's good. That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, this has been a 3.5-hour podcast, but thank you all for hanging in there. What a great discussion. This next weekend, we're going to have everybody up at the front of the room. Kevin and Susie and Tim and I guess Mike on Zoom. Mm-hmm. All sort of wrapping up this series and helping us begin to make that transition into this time of feasting and fellowship. So thanks to all of you guys for being with us on the podcast today. And until next time, thank you for listening to Journey Now.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed these episodes, please consider helping us continue to produce them with a financial gift. Go to journeytn.com/give to learn more.